you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm gonna rise up, gonna kick a little ass, gonna kick some ass in the USA. Gonna climb a mountain, gonna sew a flag, gonna fly on an eagle. I'm gonna kick some butt, I'm gonna drive a big truck, I'm gonna rule this world. I'm gonna kick some ass, I'm gonna rise up, I'm gonna kick a little ass. Rock, flag, and eagle!
Okay.
America.
Okay. Thanks to Mike Florio, Garrett Podell, and Layla for joining us today. She had to run to the all-important 2:30 meeting. She can't miss that. She is not exempt.
Well, she's the lead anchor, and they've got a special event coming up. Oh, so
I get it.
So, you know.
She got all the NASCAR stuff.
Yeah, all of the NASCAR. Yep. And on southbound, actually both bound Lakeshore Drive, you will see all the fencing is set up. I just saw that driving in this morning for the race this weekend.
In fact, racing. At night, at 10 o'clock or so, you will have wonderful traffic still on Lakeshore Drive because of all the fencing and the NASCAR setup.
Yeah.
You got that going for you.
And it's down to like one lane going southbound. So I'm going to use the lower whacker hack to get back home today.
Lower hacker, am I right? Thanks to Ray Diaz.
No, you're not right.
Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka for their things and stuff. Parkins and Spiegel are here. Hello, boys.
What's up? Those of us Kennedy commuters.
I know.
I've no sympathy.
I know.
I live on that highway. It's horrible.
It has its own zip code. Highway has its own zip code. Danny gets mail there.
Well, life is a highway, Danny.
I mean, it's amazing, though. I am getting a lot of reading and YouTube watching done because I'm going 0 miles an hour for a 10-mile commute. It's just ridiculous.
How's War and Peace going?
It's insane. Danny's like, I'm really banging out these audiobooks. I'm like, I'm reading books.
Like, actual? Is this like Phil Jackson doing crossword puzzles while he's driving the team van?
Dude, ooh. It's safe. Yeah. It's safe.
No, it is not.
It is.
No, it's not.
It is not.
Dan, I'm going 0 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you're still in a death machine.
My car.
Death machine.
That is the White Sox.
It has the like automatic braking thing that lets you know if you're coming up on a car in front of you too fast. It has the side sensors.
Okay.
I just coast along at 4 miles an hour home.
Yeah, we've got.
Everyone can see you.
We have achieved a certain level of the future now with the automatic braking thing and the side sensors.
I hate the automatic braking thing.
You Me do? Too.
I turned it off.
I usually disengage it.
I turned it off because I'm like,
well, that's
I'm
hard for your reading.
That's true.
I didn't really think of that.
He's
I guess
not getting a lot of reading done.
Yeah, I'm just going to change my reading habits.
I'm just saying.
No, you're right, Danny. You're right about that.
That's
it
what
definitely
I do.
Would. Mess up your reading.
That's what I do
would
most
read
of my...
if I didn't have the automatic braking thing on.
That's what I do most of my writing, actually.
Yeah.
I do more writing than reading.
I do a lot of Legos. Really complicated grown-up Lego
the Death Star
architecture.
You know, you're just like,
yeah, Frank Lloyd Wright house, all that. Yeah, it's great to do while driving.
It's doable.
It became a scam at some point, the Lego thing. It makes me sad. The pieces are in all different kinds of shapes now. Like, hey, where am I going to get a piece that looks like this to do that? Oh, they just made one.
So
that's not a Lego.
Neither one of my kids got into Legos.
Ruben did for a while. I enjoyed it. I helped him make the mystery machine, the Scooby-Doo and
mystery
the gang.
Mystery machine.
The plural of Lego is Lego. It's not Legos.
You're right.
We did go Thank to you. Legoland.
You did out in California?
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend, friend Justin Roberts, great kids music artist, nominated for several Grammys. They played New Year's Eve at Legoland, 7 p.m. show. I always loved that.
He probably got 50 grand for it.
I'm sure they did very well. Yeah. But what time's your New Year's Eve show? 7 p.m. Yeah,
I heard so, it may have been PK.
Actually,
that said,
that's perfect for me now.
You've aged into that.
Perfect.
Maybe it
one
was a,
set.
It was a, I think it was a celeb that was saying that concerts, there should be a whole new thing now of concerts that start at 5.
Dude. Amen.
You know how many times, Tributosaurus, we've talked about this. We used to do the 7 o'clock show and the 10 o'clock show. Eventually, we aged out of the 10 o'clock show, and we've talked about eventually adding the 5 o'clock show.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Or like an afternoon show.
Sure.
Like a weekend 1 o'clock. You want to rock? Get here at 1
yes.
o'clock.
I want to rock, and then I want to go play 9 holes.
And or you want to go to a show, then you want to go to your dinner at 5:30, and then go home. That's what you want.
But first, rock.
That's luxury.
Hey, man.
That is luxury.
Part of our success has been a 7 o'clock show or a 7:30 show, and you can get home and relieve the babysitter, or whatever you're calling it these days, by 9:30 or 10 o'clock.
He's home relieving the babysitter.
Exactly.
Did you see what closed at Lincoln and Grace?
At Lincoln?
That hot dog stand, Mangi's?
You know,
the one right up from Martyrs?
Yeah. No,
near the Trader Joe's there.
I would never
think
gone
that
there.
Would,
it's
really?
My fault. It's my fault.
That wait, that place closed?
Yeah.
No. I would Martyrs think, is your spot.
I thought that would be a
true.
Frequent haunt of
no,
yours.
We would always go to Diner Grill. We'd always go around the corner to Diner Grill.
Dinner Slinger. Grill.
Or we used to go down Lincoln to the Golden Apple.
Still and
still let's go.
Yeah. Still going strong. Still 24/7.
Yeah, it's open every
one
all
of
time.
The last. And the owner says, like, we don't have locks.
First,
and he didn't mean the smoked fish.
First Wednesday of the month for like 6 years of Tributosaurus, we would end up at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at the Golden Apple.
I tried to convince people after the Roy Wood Jr. show that that's where we should go. It's
100%.
Right there.
Yes.
Was there 2 weeks
I'm
ago?
I'm like, let's
that's
go.
Still great.
Better never.
But I
best Monte Cristo in town.
Yeah, like I felt like the old guy, and I was just like, instead of us trying to go find some trouble, like, why don't we just go hang out at this awesome diner that's around the corner?
So
get some breakfast for dinner.
At the beginning, we would go, and there was this one waitress. She was really cool, really nice, but she had terrible teeth, right? We used
to know
see
her. The curly hair?
I don't know.
Thanks for outing her, Dan.
Know her.
Oh, yeah. Waitress with bad teeth? Sure. Oh, yeah, of course.
No, great waitress.
Not anymore. Because about 2 years in, she started going to the dentist. And by 4 years in, she had incredible teeth. So we thought, we tipped her very well every time. We financed her teeth.
Well,
we thought if we kept going, she would just add another layer of teeth every couple of years.
Like a shark?
Why not?
I think that's how it works.
The more milkshakes we got, the better we tipped, the more layers of teeth she would have.
When I was in college, Salt and Pepper Diner was the place to go.
Oh, yeah, on Clark.
So there's a... No, on Lincoln.
Near Sheffield.
There was also the Lincoln Diner, too.
Hold on, I'm not done yet, Dan. There's a place that's on the corner of Webster and Lincoln that is something, and it says, like, Salt and Pepper, and I'm like, is this where they went? Is this their new venture? I can't remember the name of it, but it feels like it's like this, kind of like Little Goat. Like, it kind of feels like... Oh, this is where they went.
Like a sub-brand of some kind?
Yeah, and now I'm like, do I need to go in there to inspect this salt and pepperness?
So what brilliant comics bit, famous bit?
Mulaney.
John Mulaney.
Mulaney's What's New Pussycat.
Yeah. Whoa!
Is that the Salt and Pepper Diner?
Has anybody been to what the Golden Apple on Irving Park on the west side of the Kennedy? In old Irving Park there.
I don't think
that
so.
It used to be a Golden Nugget. And now the old Golden Nugget is now
on Lawrence?
No, the other Golden Nugget on Irving Park is now Wasun.
I thought it was
Chinese
place.
It's
not a Golden Shower.
No, but there is a diner, an independently owned diner
Tanny?
Just opened up.
Peter.
Tanny's right.
Wait, you dumped that? Yeah, of course they did.
They didn't dump that. Now he did.
Yeah, he did. You can't. I don't think. Hey, whee!
Dump that.
Yeah, dump that.
Out of the way. Ring the bell, kid.
What was your question?
So is that Golden Apple now? Is that what that is?
What is in the Golden Nugget on Irving Park?
I don't think anything yet.
Yes, it's a diner, but it's not one of these. It's not Big Diner.
But the Golden Nugget on near you is still exists, right?
The one on Clybourne and Diversey is still a Golden Nugget. Correct. They just redid it, and they doubled all the prices.
Oh. Well, I mean, still, you were getting a good deal back in the day. I don't mind paying the double prices.
A quick parenting question for the parents of the room.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Either you guys have any fireworks horror stories? I'm keeping Owen up tonight, taking him to the 9:30 fireworks show. That's almost 2 hours after the bedtime, but then getting out of there, won't be home till 11. He's done fireworks once, wasn't scared of them.
Great.
But I vividly remember my little sisters going to fireworks shows and crying, and then my dad having to like carry them out of there.
are you going headphones?
Because I think
you should, because I think that's the thing that scares kids. It's the loud noises, not the light show.
Yeah, the thumpers that you feel in your chest.
Yeah,
those intentional thumpers. That's scary. Yeah, that's a good call.
That's part of the reason, strange enough, from the guy who's not a parent. But that's the stuff that like kind of gets the dogs too, where it's the sound and it's the – how's Omar going to be dealing with all of this?
He doesn't notice anything.
Omar abides.
He's so chill. We had a mouse in the house, and he just is like, fine. he had no problem.
Give it to him.
Mouse in the house.
Give it to him.
That's what I'm saying. He's right next to me right now as I broadcast from home, just completely passed out. Nothing gets this thing
done. Mouse in the house.
That's what happened with Trista's dog, right? We were playing with Emma in the hallway, and then she came in here and was on air, and the dog went immediately to sleep.
The moment we gave our hot sports takes, Emma fell asleep.
Oh, yeah, that checks out.
Yep.
Just hung out asleep. It was great.
Hey, it's good if you can do it, man. Neither one of my kids likes fireworks all that much.
I love
fireworks. I think my parents would. That's a great thing to just farm out to somebody else.
Yeah, you should allow someone else to do a fireworks show. Yes.
But I'm saying,
that's
like,
very important.
Someone else can take your kids to the
fireworks. I'd be happy to, Dan. I mean, like, Ruben is in the sweet spot. Like, if we go to a fireworks show tomorrow, I think we're going to go to one in the burbs where some family lives. And that's an opportunity to let the 11-year-old or the 12-year-old roam free and learn what it's like to be in charge of their own fate. And have a couple hours out there. And then, you know, we got a little flag. You put up a flag with the picnic spot or whatever, and you come back to us. And now I treasured those early bits of freedom like that. I mean, you need that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I found a lot of trouble with fireworks shows when we moved out to Homewood.
Hell yeah, man. That counts.
A lot.
That's freedom. Go learn. Check it out.
I had to learn.
He's gonna come back with a bag of weed if he's doing it right.
Yeah, how much cash are you going to allow him to run around with?
Well, how much, Dan? How much is a
twin?
How much is a bag of weed going for these days? How much should I give my 12-year-old son?
I wouldn't know. I don't buy flour. I could tell you what edibles cost or what a vape pen costs.
So I just give him a card and send him to a dispensary.
This seems to take away the whole point.
The romance is gone.
I learned freedom by going into Sunnyside.
The whole romance is gone. Although, did you ever, as a little kid, did your family ever go to an old-fashioned flea market?
Yes.
Like kind of like these weird, creepy, low-end flea markets?
Absolutely. See what you can find.
They would give us freedom. They'd say, look, meet back here. Here's a few bucks, and meet back here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
And what would you come back with?
Usually
a sombrero.
All right, look, these guys got to go. They got to interview the manager of the Cubs.
Throwing stars.
Actually, what I often came back with was an interview with Craig Counsell, which will be coming up a little bit later.
As I said that.
On 670.
20 minutes till Counsell. Tanny's open, kicks us off. Who Spiegel went to the Cubs game with last night is so remarkable that it's probably worth leading the show. It's so cool. So we will begin there to inject some good vibes into this baseball season. Tanny's open, kicks us off. Have a lovely holiday, boys. Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nico Horner.
All right, we love talking about issues around the game with you. Read this the other day about sticky stuff. This was in Bob Nightingale's piece in USA Today. A veteran executive told him this. The key is trying to figure out how pitchers are doing it. Quote, if umpires started checking infielders' gloves, I think they'd find the answer. Unquote. Well, that's intriguing.
I haven't seen that.
That's a mystery.
All right, Nico. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Thanks, man.
It's Nico Horner. Yeah.
Was that my...
That was you. Matt Schriftdog. Wild Pantera.
I was just trying to say,
On the prowl!
That was, you know,
you growled
leaned in a little too hard.
You growled a little bit. There was a little bit of a reverb.
Great defensive rotation by the Bears. Arr!
You just growl at me?
I mean, for anybody who didn't hear it, I liked the Panther sound effect.
Well, I know. It's inspiring.
I thought Shrippin nailed it.
I'm not saying that you didn't.
Once we did the forensic analysis of, like, does he actually sound like a Panther? The answer was yes.
Arr, arr, yes.
All right, that does sound awful. I'd like to apologize. I knew what I meant. I knew what I was trying to do.
Akeem, what a defensive performance by this team tonight. You kept a high-flying offense out of the end zone.
That's it. That's all you can say to them.
Things that make you go.
One, two, three,
and here we go, Tim. Here we go. Here we go, Tim.
Here we go, Tony.
Turn on a fire drill.
Spiegel Show, afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Please don't growl in a question to Craig Counsell coming up in 10 minutes.
There's no way to know if I'm going to do that.
I know. And I mean, honestly, who cares? Yeah, go ahead and growl.
You know, it's just...
You be you.
You know what I was trying to recreate, Danny, was the... you know when you text or you're typing and you write, with a lot of M's as if to indicate that you have a question, but you think you know the answer anyway, but you'd like to ask the question, and that's what came out right there.
That's an interesting way of interviewing.
Yeah.
you know how you text?
Uh-huh.
You know, we got a good action plan.
We do have a good action plan for Craig Counsell.
We do.
We're all about the action plan with that guy.
That's true.
Most important thing we could discuss.
That's true. Yeah. Well, there's an action plan to get you to a Mullion Haw live show if you'd like to be in attendance on July 18th from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. It's a really fun place to see a show, live studio audience, special guests in attendance. We got a pair of tickets. All you got to do is have the contest number ready. When you hear this drop,
you know, if Joakim Noah didn't average a double-double every night, then what in the world is he doing playing basketball? It's not impressive. 10 points and 10 boards? Woo, whipty frickin' do.
So,
it's amazing.
Whenever you hear that, and you're like, I want more of it, 312-540-0670.
I want to see it in person, face-to-face.
That's what I'm saying.
Imagine that in a down vest. You know what I'm saying? That's how much better it could be.
You got to be there. We don't have a lot of time before we have to break for Counsell.
Uh-huh.
But I want to bring this up early in the show so we can reference it throughout the show.
Sure.
Because we sometimes, you know, you and I see the world similarly on a lot of things. And I think one of the things is, yes, the goal is to win championships, but also this is an entertainment product of sorts. But you got to work a little bit harder for the entertainment when the product is as bad and as disappointing as the Cubs have been. But you went to the Cubs game last night with a very interesting person.
Yeah, I was invited by a friend who's also a friend of yours,
we could say his name.
Yeah,
if you
Doug.
Want.
Doug Meyer had met Carl Denson, who is jam band royalty and just an incredible musician, who also happens to be the saxophonist these days in the Rolling Stones. He's in the Rolling Stones. He's one of the two saxophonists with the Stones these days. And so he had met him and invited him to a ball game. And decided that as the social lubricant, he needed somebody who could speak both baseball and music. So that was me. I got invited. So I got to hang out last night with Carl Denson, who's a fascinating dude, a brilliant guy, and fun to introduce to people around the ballpark as Carl. He's in the Rolling Stones. That was fun to say to a lot of people. He's been in the Stones for a decade. He's been playing with them. Whenever they have a horn section, it's him and Tim Reese on saxophone. So yeah, it was an amazing night full of like great conversations. I loved talking to him and showing him around the ballpark. It was so cool.
Did you say Rolling Stones more than he did?
Only when I was trying to take him upstairs and show him a good time. We'll show him the broadcast booth, and I had a chance to introduce him to the organist, to John Benedek, you know, figured that he would care. And then like Big Jim Obojkovic, who handles all the celebrity stuff for the Cubs. I happen to see him. I'm like, well, he ought to know who I'm here with. You know what I mean? So
yes.
Yes, I did.
I'm just saying it's fun. It's
oh
a fun
my God.
Thing to say.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Yeah. It was crazy. And just like to see baseball people get very excited to talk to him. But he was so excited to be there. And like we go up there and at one point, somebody had said, oh, you know, has he met Quick Rick Fuse, who does the scoreboard, guy who's in charge of the scoreboard, big Stones fan. So I bring Carl up there. I'm introducing him to Quick Rick while he's doing the job. And then before you know it, Carl is punching buttons and changing the score on the scoreboard. He's like, so this guy is like having one of the times of his life. So me and Doug got to show this guy the time of his life when he's usually the one showing other people the time of their life, taking them backstage with Mick and Keith and more.
That's very cool.
It was awesome.
That's just very cool. You got to go to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones and our good friend Doug Meyer, who is once again going to be a generous supporter of the Radiothon, the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon for cancer research coming up August 15th.
I got awesome stories about Mick and Keith where we can sprinkle in later.
Dig yourself.
I want to hear them.
Yeah,
man.
We'll get them in.
Like, whenever the conversation around the sports gets too negative, people need to just stay tuned because at any moment we could just say, screw it, give me a Stone story.
All right, I just got a couple. But I got other stuff, other people he played with and stuff that maybe people wouldn't care about as much, but we'll sprinkle them in.
We talking Stones? We done.
Yeah, we're almost done. Thanks, Coach. But we got
just
more.
Just saying, man. It beats the Cubs game, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and Danny, I forgot to ask him the most important thing. I told you what I had to ask him. His most important, perhaps, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He was in Sexual Chocolate in Coming to America.
Jackson Heights' own Mr. Randy Watson. Yes, Randy Watson.
That boy is good.
I'd like to give a big round of applause to my band, Sexual Chocolate.
That's him playing sax in Sexual Chocolate.
So how does that not come up?
Because his career's unbelievable. Dude played with James Brown. He played with Bob Dylan. He played with Phil Lesh and Bob Weir. He's on Lenny Kravitz's debut record. I didn't get there, man. Conversation was flowing.
I don't accept that.
Oh.
We'll just have to have him on.
That's exactly right.
I'll ask him all the Sexual Chocolate questions that we've been dying to know. That's
ahead,
very,
Randy.
Very cool.
Go ahead, Randy Watson.
And it beats the hell out of the Cubs game. Craig Counsell, he's the manager of this thing. Maybe he'll explain what's coming on as we're now past the midway point of this season. Craig Counsell next on The Score.
Love of all inside of me,
Sexy Chocolate!
Please welcome the manager, number 30, Craig Counsell.
I know it's official that I'm a Cub now, and I'm talking to Danny Parkins, you know what I mean?
Craig Counsell.
Nobody is interested in your takes, I promise. I promise.
God, that
I
checks
promise.
Out.
What are they tuning into right now?
This guy over here, it's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. You're a guest, Craig.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Did you see the meme? You were memed very well last week with the hat head.
No, I try to stay away from that. I think that's healthy for me.
Don't you think he needs somebody in his life that tells him when he's been memed? You think?
We could be that for you, Craig.
Oh, God.
Hey, you guys are so much for me already. I don't want to put too much on your plate.
All right, fine, smartass. That's Craig Counsell, manager of the Chicago Cubs.
We mean a lot to him. I think that's what he said. You guys are already so much for me.
Hey, you guys are so much for me already.
We're not going to be the people in his lap to tell him what he's been memed.
I can only imagine how little we mean to him.
Craig Counsell with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Craig Counsell, kind enough to join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Thanks for the time, as always, Craig. How's it going, man?
Good, good. Thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing well. When do we get any reinforcements? There's a lot of injured guys. I know Merriweather threw yesterday. Any timeline on any of these guys coming back to help you out a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of the general timeline. Nobody's into rehab games yet, so I think the general timeline for a group of guys is post All-Star break and the second half of July. I think Mark Leiter's probably trending towards the first one back just because he hasn't missed that much. I'd say Leiter and Assad are probably the early ones. And then second half of July is kind of the Julian Merriweather. I'd say Merriweather and Jordan Wicks kind of second half of July.
What have you learned about some of the young guys who have been forced into some arduous situations in their stead over the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think, I think you're talking about Luke Little and Porter Hodge probably. Yeah. And I think they've done great with these opportunities, and it's been, for Luke, we've seen him most of the year, and he's done a great job, I think, since coming back up, of just sticking to like what he needs to do to be better. And it's really about, you have to be two pitches. You can't just be one pitch in the strike zone. And since the slider's been in the strike zone, it's no coincidence that he's been a better pitcher. And then Porter, really, we're 15 innings into a big league career. So, the learning that's coming at him is really fast, but he is learning fast, and we've seen good results from that.
Last night, the early innings kind of felt like the season. Like, balls hit hard in the first inning. Nico is, 6 inches from a double down the line, and Castellanos makes that catch on Bellinger. And then they get a two-run opposite field double from a backup catcher. It's like, when you're going through a stretch like this, does the mood in the dugout go south when things have been bad already to that point?
No, because you got to go out there and compete still, and we all know that doesn't help you. Because when you're you got competition coming right ahead of you, you better have kind of your game face on, so to speak, at all times, because there's more coming at you. So, you keep competing, you keep doing your best. You can kind of tell a story about how the game didn't go your way. Nobody's going to feel bad for you about that. You just got to do a little better.
Do you scoreboard or standings watch at this point of the year?
I do not. I mean, the scoreboard, I think everybody scoreboard watches because it's we're staring at it every day, so it's hard to say you don't scoreboard watch. Standings watch, no.
Even though you're staring at those flags every day.
Well, if you're staring at the flag, you're staring at the scoreboards, I think.
That's true. That's a good point. It is in the same general direction. I guess you were saying,
Do you lack peripheral vision?
No, I can take it all in, and it's all right there on my app.
Nice.
Smartphones, they're unbelievable. But like you were saying, All-Star break, late July, but then you have the reality of, okay, we're in last place, we're double-digit games out, It's almost like, is that going to be too little too late given the realities of where you are in the standings?
Yeah, it just doesn't do me any good to think like that. You think about today's game and what do you control? And that's how you have to go about this. I can't worry about 12 games down the road. You worry about tonight. You worry about trying to get a result tonight. And then when you look up in 12 days, you're going to be, after a product of your results those previous 12 days. And that sounds, it's how you have to do it. And we'll keep doing it that way.
It's funny, Craig, through the years, so many times watching baseball, covering baseball is like, well, they're struggling. It's about time to fire the hitting coach. It's so often just kind of a default first step that sort of happens or whatever. And I've fought against that because, like, hitting is so hard, and individual relationships with hitting coaches and anecdotal stuff, like, it can be a tricky thing. But looking at this team, I keep thinking, God, there seems to be some kind of group hitting thing that's wrong. Something's broken on a group level with the overall hitting approach. So can you help us understand if that is even a thing? Like the overall group's mindset at the plate, thinking of it as one cohesive thing, it looking the way it looks right now is troubling. Is that a concept we can even get behind, that you all share one sort of concept in that way?
Well, I mean, I think there's, like, you go into games and you share a concept for sure. Like, is the concept wrong? I mean, I think there's individual nights you can say, yeah, I mean, the guy did a better job with that than we expected. But I think last night we were, you know, I think we were on the right concept. We didn't get hits from it. And that's, you know, you didn't get hits. We didn't square the ball up quite enough. But usually, like, look, it's on, you know, I think hitting is on the, you know, the individuals, and the individuals kind of collectively doing well and taking their turns doing well together creates a circle. And then you get some, you know, your best players do some really impressive things as compared to the league. And that's what creates offense. And we've struggled in a couple areas this year, and that's what's led to, you know, frankly, not a good enough offense.
Where do you think you've struggled the most when you think about it?
Well, the number one is we've struggled from offense at the catcher position. There's no question about that. And then, you know, I think I don't think we have any players kind of having, you know, the all-star type seasons offensively. So nobody's kind of exceeding expectations. So that caps it. And then the unlucky part is the runners in scoring position stuff is that's the point where you can kind of point to we just haven't caught breaks there. And that's, you know, I think statistically plays out too. And that hurts you as well.
You know, when we had Carter Hawkins on at Cubs convention, like to ask him the question, or anyone in his role, like, who are you guys expecting big things from that maybe fans and media aren't talking about? And he singled out one name to us this year, and he said Miguel Amaya. And then you just talked about the catching position and offensive production. What hasn't gone according to how you guys clearly projected it internally? Like, why hasn't it been working?
Yeah, I mean, the why is he you know, he's a young player that I think in 170 plate appearances last year showed a really positive first step. And there's just been regression to that this year. And he struggled this year. He's a young player. And hopefully these at bats are a teacher for him at some point. But we haven't got production from that spot. And it hurts your offense.
We're talking to Craig Counsell here, Parkinson Spiegel on the Score. You know, we get to talk to you every couple of weeks, and so now this is past the halfway point of the season. So I was thinking about things that we asked you before the season started, and we could just check back in. I remember we joked about, like, the only thing you got asked about more than yourself was Christopher Morel. How has he been defensively at third base now that we're a half a season in relative to what you expected him to be defensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is progress that is, we have moved forward there. He has gotten better. I think I'm very confident in saying that. You know, I think now the question is, like, how much better can we get the second half of the season? And then when we evaluate that, is like, is that going to be good enough moving forward to commit to the player? And I think that's kind of where we're at with it. And that's, I think that's pretty fair, but he has gotten better for sure, and I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that part. You know, probably the offense has been disappointing, but he has gotten better defensively.
Do you think that's at all carried over because of the defense? Like, is it impacting him at the plate?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
What have you learned about this bunch, about some of these guys? And now that you've had a half a season and had all the spring to get to know him. What are some things you feel like you know now that you didn't know then?
About who?
I can get specific if you like. I was going to let you go to whoever you wanted to in the lineup, but you know, how about Ian? How about Ian Happ and Nico Horner? What have you learned about those guys?
Well, I mean, I think Ian is very, what I love about Ian is very like dedicated and serious about his craft. And the detail that he kind of prepares with is really cool. For Nico, it's just like, it's kind of Energizer Bunny, man. Like it's just going and going and going. And his kind of relentlessness and grit, like they, you know, that's kind of a word that gets thrown around a lot, but like he is like the definition of grit. Like it never stops. And that's a really great trait, and it rubs off on other people.
Oh, we'll tell those guys. We get a chance to talk to those guys. We'll tell them. I'll give you Dansby Swanson and Seiya Suzuki. What have you learned about managing those guys?
You know, Dansby is really interesting because he's been on some other teams, kind of unlike those other guys, those first couple guys you mentioned. And so just some perspective from having success in some other places has been interesting for sure. You know, Dansby's season, I think, like, you know, he hasn't had the offensive season that he's wanted to for sure. You know, and I think the knee kind of messing him up early in the season that derailed him a little bit. Hopefully we can get him back on track for the second half. I think that's really important to get him. I think he's doing in a good spot health-wise now, but it certainly derailed him for a little bit. You know, I think Say is having a pretty good season. I think, you know, if you look at his numbers right now and you look at where offense in the league is, he's having a pretty good offensive season. Offense is different this year. It's a little bit down. If you look at Say's numbers, he is doing a pretty darn good job. It's quiet. It doesn't feel like super loud, but he's doing a pretty good job.
I'll ask you about one more guy in like the micro. We get asked about him more than maybe anyone else by fans, and that's PCA, right? Like the speed is easy to see. The glove is easy to see. So hyped as a prospect and who he came here for in a trade. He has that at bat in the Saturday game against Milwaukee where he rallies 0-2 count, drives the ball to right field, puts you guys ahead, seems like a mature at bat. He's had stand-up triples. That's easy to profile. But, like, what do you think he profiles as an offensive player at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, Pete is a player that there's been players, very many similar players like this, and it's just it's easy to see his physical gifts. For even for fans, right? It's just they just jump out at you, and those players have come with the biggest expectations, and they often come with the largest learning curve too. That's just kind of the way it is, and so Pete's like still needs at bats. There's no question. Like experience, just facing major league pitching. Like sometimes it's the failures too, but we just got to keep Pete going in the right direction. He's an unfinished offensive player. There's no question about unfinished hitter. And we've just got to keep making progress with him as a hitter. It's not always linear. And sometimes it's frankly, some of the at-bats are tough to watch. Right. But we just got to keep making progress with him because it's where the, you know, there is a great player in there. You don't know when it's going to come out exactly, but there is a great player in there.
We're talking to Craig Counsell. I know, you know, your job is as manager, like you said, win a game today, but you have front office experience. It's July. You understand the conversation around the trade deadline. Theo Epstein once told Spiegs and I on the show, like, even if you're in a competitive window, you can never waste an opportunity to sell by like lying to yourself about what you are in that particular year, because those opportunities when you're supposed to be competitive are so infrequent. Do you share that philosophy in general if it came to that?
I'm not sure I understand what he said. Can you...
Yeah, so, I mean, this was in 17?
It was in 17.
17.
And he was admitting that they were going to have to consider selling if they didn't get it together by around the time the deadline came.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always just look at it like you just got to make good decisions. Like whatever a good decision is, make the good decision. So it's simple as that. Like for me, I don't know.
You know, it's an interesting spot, Craig, is like manager value and what it is. You know, I remember during the press conference, you talked very specifically about it's a lot of good decisions kind of lining up. And that accumulates the value. Is a half season enough to see what a manager's value is? Because it's been a tough go, as you know.
I don't know. I mean, I know my philosophy hasn't changed there, so I'm going to keep doing that. And I still think that's my job, so that's not going to change.
We were wondering who the best offensive player you had was as a teammate and how it impacted you guys in the lineup when you were like, oh, damn, that guy was carrying us and like the presence of the superstar as a player.
The best offensive season probably that I ever saw was probably Luis Gonzalez in 2001.
I'm looking at it right now. Figured that's where you're going to go. That's pretty good. 57 homers, 142 RBIs for Luis Gonzalez, OPS over 1.1. So yeah, that's the question. What was the impact for you guys knowing that you had a dude who was just like dominating like that? How did that have an effect on the rest of the lineup, if it did?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was a great offensive team, actually. But it was obviously a good, very good team. I mean, it helped me. I hit in front of them. I mean, I knew they weren't going to try to walk me because why would you? But it didn't make me any better, really. You know?
No.
The thing it helped is that you have one player just creating so many runs. I mean, that's what those seasons do. He was by himself just creating a massive number of runs. And so he's basically taking the burden off, you know, players like myself or whoever, other players in the lineup.
So psychologically, does it help Bryson Stott or Alec Bohm to know that they've got superstars around them in the lineup to improve? Is that a real thing in MLB?
Look, I think obviously players having great years, there is some psychological benefit to it. Like, I can't tell you exactly how much. But of course, like watching a guy have a great year around you, he's doing great things for your team that clearly is going to make you feel good.
Hey, you carried him in the 2001 NLCS, okay?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe for five games. Yep.
See, just say it. Give yourself a little credit. All right, Craig. Well, thank you for the time, man. As always, go get him tonight, and we'll see you at the ballpark soon.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank
Craig.
You. As manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell with us. Yeah, that's five games still, but it's a big five games. NLCS MVP.
He admitted to it a little bit there. The psychological effect of having. Of knowing there's a stud in your lineup or a couple of them and being able to take some of that pressure off. It's impossible for me to watch the Phillies, arguably the best team in baseball, at their high water mark right now in terms of games above 500, even without Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, just unleashing stud after stud after young player. That's Mercado getting his first win. You know, you'll see Wheeler and Nola and Suarez. And you saw, like, there's just so much badassery on that team. And I have to believe that young players feel a freedom to perform at a higher level and improve, knowing full well that there's a couple $300 million dudes right there in the lineup. I have to believe that.
Well, it actually – so I haven't heard – I've heard – basically every post-game Craig Counsell press conference this season. I have not heard every pre-game one. I've heard a decent amount of them. He keeps saying a version of, the offense has to be better, the offense has to be better, the offense has to be better. But that answer that he gave early on in our conversation about, like, why hasn't it been? He listed three things. He said, haven't gotten enough from the catcher position. We've had no all-star caliber seasons offensively, and that caps how good you could be. And then he said, and then obviously the runners in scoring position thing, which has been talked about a lot. But I think that second, like the first point about Amaya was interesting. We followed up on it. Mm-hmm. The third point, runners in scoring position, we've beaten it into the ground. But that second point, I've talked about it a lot with you. That ties into your Luis Gonzalez thing.
Yeah, there's nobody performing at such a level where you're like, oh man, that dude's going to carry us for a little while. It freaking matters, man.
And they have guys that are absolutely being paid like they're supposed to. Dansby is supposed to be able to do it, even if it's just for a stretch. I know a lot of his value is defense, but he's supposed to have stretches where he does it. Saya is supposed to have stretches where he does it. Bellinger is supposed to have stretches where he does it. And Morel is supposed to have stretches where he does it. Mm. And just in that interview, he was like, I actually think Saya is having a pretty good year. Okay. You can squint and see where he's coming from.
No, you can't. With an 800 OPS, and he continues to hit the ball hard, the exit velocity stuff is there. But no, and you
and with a big injury in the middle of it.
Yep. And you've made this point about nobody having a career year. I think I saw this today. I'll have to find it. I think the only dudes who are exceeding their projected F WAR, their projected wins above replacement on the Cubs, are Shota Imanaga. He might be the only one. You know,
Assad.
I saw with Shota there might be only one other.
Okay.
And I'll have to check and see who it is. But it's, I mean, maybe it's Bush, but it's like there's, of all the teams and people exceeding their projected F WAR, the Cubs are very, very low on that list. No one is doing it, but he expected that and told us early in the year it's got to be young players.
I think there was a lot of fascinating stuff in there actually today with like some of the specifics on guys on PCA, biggest learning curve but highest ceiling for him. I don't know that we've talked about him in that way specifically with like why his talents would lend itself to having a bigger learning curve than most. I thought that was interesting. I think there was a lot there. And then just keep making good decisions. We saw it with the Hendricks stuff. He is dispassionate. He is a cutthroat, rational thinker.
Thinks a lot more like a front office dude than a manager sometimes.
He will not have a problem if this team needs to sell. I mean, he'll obviously be pissed. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to project that onto him. He will be pissed because it will represent failure and underachieving. But if that is the correct decision, he will be pushing for that decision to be made. I think there was a lot there that people could chew on actually and react to from Craig Counsell if you want to. And of course, if it ever got too negative for you, Spiegs was at the game last night with a Rolling Stone. We'll get to that at some point. We've got categories today. We have our last Peter's Ponderings to get to today. And oh boy, do we have some sound and audio that'll get you hyped for maybe the only good team in Chicago? It's Parkins and Spiegel on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
I'm gonna kick a little ass, gonna kick some ass in the USA. Gonna climb a mountain, gonna soar a flag, gonna fly on an eagle. I'm gonna kick some butt, I'm gonna drive a big truck, I'm gonna rule this world. I'm gonna kick some ass, I'm gonna rise up, I'm gonna kick a little ass. Rock flag and eagle!
Okay.
America.
Okay.
Thanks to Mike Florio, Garrett Podell, and Layla for joining us today. She had to run to the all-important 2:30 meeting. She can't miss that. She is not exempt.
Well,
she's the lead anchor, and they've got a special event coming up. Oh, so
I get it.
So, you know.
She got all the NASCAR stuff.
Yeah, all of the NASCAR. Yep. And on southbound, actually both bound Lakeshore Drive, you will see all the fencing is set up. I just saw that driving in this morning for the race this weekend.
In fact, at night, at 10 o'clock or so, you will have wonderful traffic still on Lakeshore Drive because of all the fencing and the NASCAR setup.
Yeah.
Got that going for you.
And it's down to like one lane going southbound. So I'm going to use the lower whacker hack to get back home today.
Lower hacker, am I right? Thanks to Ray Diaz.
No, you're not right.
Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka for their things and stuff. Parkins and Spiegel are here. Hello, boys.
What's up? Those of us Kennedy commuters.
I know.
I've no sympathy.
I know.
I live on that highway. It's horrible.
It has its own zip code. Highway has its own zip code. Danny gets mail there.
Well, life is a highway, Danny.
I mean, it's amazing, though. I am getting a lot of reading and YouTube watching done because I'm going 0 miles an hour for a 10-mile commute. It's just ridiculous.
How's War and Peace going?
It's insane. Danny's like, I'm really banging out these audiobooks. I'm like, I'm reading books.
Like, actual? Is this like Phil Jackson doing crossword puzzles while he's driving the team van?
Dude, ooh. It's safe. Yeah. It's safe.
No, it is not.
It is.
No, it's not.
It is not.
Dan, I'm going 0 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you're still in a death machine.
My car.
Death machine. That is the White Sox.
It has the like automatic braking thing that lets you know if you're coming up on a car in front of you too fast. It has the side sensors.
Okay.
I just coast along at 4 miles an hour home.
Yeah, we've got
everyone can see you.
We have achieved a certain level of the future now with the automatic braking thing and the side sensors.
I hate the automatic braking thing.
Me too.
I turned it off.
I usually disengage it.
I turned it off because I'm like,
well, that's hard for your reading.
That's true.
I didn't really think of that.
He's not getting a lot of reading done.
Yeah, I'm just going to change my reading habits.
I'm just saying.
No, you're right, Danny. You're right about that.
That's
it
what
definitely
I do.
Would. Mess up your reading.
That's what I
would
do
never
most
read
of my...
if I didn't have the automatic braking thing on.
That's what I do most of my writing, actually.
Yeah.
I do more writing than reading.
I do a lot of Legos. Really complicated grown-up Lego
the Death Star
architecture.
You know, you're just like,
yeah, Frank Lloyd Wright house, all that. Yeah, it's great to do while driving.
It's doable.
It became a scam at some point, the Lego thing. It makes me sad. The pieces are in all different kinds of shapes now. Like, hey, where am I going to get a piece that looks like this to do that? Oh, they just made one.
So
that's not a Lego.
Neither one of my kids got into Legos.
Ruben did for a while. I enjoyed it. I helped him make the mystery machine, the Scooby-Doo and
mystery
the gang.
Mystery machine.
The plural of Lego is Lego. It's not Legos.
You're right.
We did go Thank to Legoland.
You did out in California?
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend Justin Roberts, great kids music artist, nominated for several Grammys. They played New Year's Eve at Legoland, 7 p.m. show. I always loved that.
He probably got $50,000 for it.
I'm sure they did very well.
Yeah.
But what time's your New Year's Eve show? 7 p.m. Yeah,
I heard so, it may have been PK.
Actually,
that said,
that's perfect for me now.
You've aged into that.
Perfect.
Maybe it
one
was a,
set.
It was. I think it was a celeb that was saying that concerts. There should be a whole new thing now, of concerts that start at 5.
Dude,
hey, you know how many times Tributosaurus? We've talked about this. We used to do the 7 o'clock show and the 10 o'clock show. Eventually, we aged out of the 10 o'clock show, and we've talked about eventually adding the 5 o'clock show.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Or like an afternoon show.
Sure.
Like a weekend 1 o'clock. You want to rock? Get here at 1 o'clock.
I want to rock, and then I want to go play 9 holes.
And or you want to go to a show, then you want to go to your dinner at 5:30, and then go home. That's what you want.
But first, rock.
That's luxury.
Hey, man.
That is luxury.
Part of our success has been a 7 o'clock show or 7:30 show. And you can get home and relieve the babysitter, or whatever you're calling it these days, by 9:30 or 10 o'clock.
He's home relieving the babysitter.
Exactly.
Did you see what closed at Lincoln and Grace?
At Lincoln?
That hot dog stand, Mangi's? You know, the one right up from Martyrs?
Yeah. No, near the
Trader Joe's there.
I would never think that.
Really?
It's my fault.
Wait, that place closed?
Yeah.
No. I would think Martyrs is your spot.
I thought that would be a frequent haunt of me.
We would always go to Diner Grill. We'd always go around the corner to Diner Grill.
Dinner
Slinger.
Or we used to go down Lincoln to the Golden Apple.
Let's go.
Yeah. Still going strong. Still 24/7.
Yeah, open every
one of the last. And the owner says, like, we don't have locks.
First,
and he didn't mean the smoked fish.
First Wednesday of the month for like 6 years of Tributosaurus, we would end up at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at the Golden Apple.
I tried to convince people after the Roy Wood Jr. show that that's where we should go. It's right there.
Yes. Was there 2 weeks ago?
I'm like, let's go.
It's still great.
Better never.
But I feel
Monte Cristo in town.
Yeah, like I felt like the old guy, and I was just like, instead of us trying to go find some trouble, like, why don't we just go hang out at this awesome diner that's around the corner?
So get some
breakfast for dinner.
At the beginning, we would go, and there was this one waitress. She was really cool, really nice, but she had terrible teeth, right?
I know her. Curly hair?
I don't know.
Thanks for outing her, Dan.
I know her.
Oh, yeah. Waitress with bad teeth? Sure. Oh, yeah, of course.
No, great waitress.
Not anymore. Because about 2 years in, she started going to the dentist. And by 4 years in, she had incredible teeth. So we thought, we tipped her very well every time. We financed her teeth.
Well,
we thought if we kept going, she would just add another layer of teeth every couple of years.
Like a shark?
Why not?
I think that's how it works.
The more milkshakes we got, the better we tipped, the more layers of teeth she would have.
When I was in college, Salt and Pepper Diner was the place to go.
Oh, yeah, on Clark.
So there's a... No, on Lincoln, near Sheffield.
There was also the Lincoln Diner.
Hold on, I'm not done yet, Dan. There's a place that's on the corner of Webster and Lincoln that is something, and it says like Salt and Pepper, and I'm like, is this where they went? Hmm. Is this their new venture? I can't remember the name of it, but it feels like it's like this, kind of like Little Goat. Like it kind of feels like, oh, this is where they went.
Like a sub-brand of some kind?
Yeah, and now I'm like, do I need to go in there to inspect this salt and pepperness?
So what brilliant comics bit, famous bit?
Mulaney's
What's New Pussycat.
Yeah. Whoa.
Is that the Salt and Pepper Diner?
Has anybody been to what the Golden Apple on Irving Park on the west side of the Kennedy? In old Irving Park there.
I don't think
that
so.
It used to be a Golden Nugget. And now that Golden Nugget is now Lawrence? No, the other Golden Nugget on Irving Park is now Wasun.
I thought it was a golden shower.
Chinese
is
place.
Is that a Golden Shower?
No, but there is a diner. An independently owned diner Tanny, just opened up.
Peter.
Tanny's right.
Wait, you dumped that? Yeah, of course they did.
They didn't dump that. Now he did.
Yeah, he did.
Dump that.
Yeah, dump that.
Out of way, ring the bell, kid.
What was your question?
So is that Golden Apple now? Is that what that
yeah,
is?
What is in the Golden Nugget on Irving Park?
I don't think anything yet.
Yes, it's a diner, but it's not one of these. It's not Big Diner.
But the Golden Nugget on near you still exists, right?
The one on Clybourne and Diversey is still a Golden Nugget. Correct. They just redid it. And they doubled all the prices.
Oh. Well, I mean, still, you were getting a good deal back in the day. I don't mind paying the double prices.
Quick parenting question for the parents of the room.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Either you guys have any fireworks horror stories? I'm keeping Owen up tonight, taking him to the 9:30 fireworks show. That's almost 2 hours after the bedtime, but then getting out of there, won't be home till 11. He's done fireworks once, wasn't scared of them.
Great.
But I vividly remember my little sisters going to fireworks shows and crying, and then my dad having to like carry them out of there.
Are you going headphones?
I think you should because I think
that's the thing that scares kids. It's the loud noises, not the light show.
Yeah, the thumpers that you feel in your chest.
Yeah,
those intentional thumpers.
Scary.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good call.
That's part of the reason, strange enough, from the guy who's not a parent. But that's the stuff that like kind of gets the dogs too, where it's the sound and it's the, how's Omar going to be dealing with all of this?
He doesn't notice anything.
Omar,
oh, great.
Omar abides.
He's so chill. We had a mouse in the house, and he just is like, fine. he had no problem.
Give it to him.
Mouse in the house.
Give it to him.
That's what I'm saying. He's right next to me right now as I broadcast from home, just completely passed out. Nothing gets this thing
done. Mouse in the house.
That's what happened with Trista's dog, right? We were playing with Emma in the hallway, and then she came in here and was on air, and the dog went immediately to sleep.
The moment we gave our hot sports takes, Emma fell asleep.
Oh, yeah, that checks out.
Yep.
Just hung out asleep. It was great.
Hey, it's good if you can do it, man. Neither one of my kids likes fireworks all that much.
I love
So
fireworks.
We never really... I think my parents would. That's a great thing to just farm out to somebody else.
Yeah, you should allow someone else to do a fireworks show. Yes,
but I'm saying that's like very important. Someone else can take your kids to the fireworks.
I'd be happy to, Dan. I mean, like Ruben is in the sweet spot. Like if we go to a fireworks show tomorrow, I think we're going to go to one in the burbs where some family lives, and that's an opportunity to let the 11-year-old or the 12-year-old roam free and learn what it's like to be in charge of their own fate. And have a couple hours out there. And then, you know, we got a little flag. You put up a flag with the picnic spot or whatever, and you come back to us. And now I treasured those early bits of freedom like that. I mean, you need that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I found a lot of trouble with fireworks shows when we moved out to Homewood.
Hell yeah, man. That counts.
A lot.
That's freedom. Go learn. Check it out.
I had to learn.
He's gonna come back with a bag of weed if he's doing it right.
Yeah, how much cash are you going to allow him to run around with?
Well, how much, Dan? How much is a
twin?
How much is a bag of weed going for these days? How much should I give my 12-year-old son?
I wouldn't know. I don't buy flour. I could tell you what edibles cost or what a vape pen costs.
So I just give him a card and send him to a dispensary.
This seems to take away the whole point.
The romance is gone.
I learned freedom by going into Sunnyside.
The whole romance is gone. Although, did you ever, as a little kid, did your family ever go to an old fashioned flea market?
Yes.
Like kind of like these weird, creepy, low end flea markets.
Absolutely. Go see what you can
find. They would give us freedom. They'd say, look, meet back here. Here's a few bucks and meet back here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
And what would you come back with?
Usually
a sombrero.
All right, look, these guys got to go. They got to interview the manager of the Cubs.
Throwing stars.
Actually, what I often came back with was an interview with Craig Counsell, which will be coming up a little bit later.
I just said that.
On 670.
20 minutes till Counsell. Tanny's open, kicks us off. Who Spiegel went to the Cubs game with last night is so remarkable that it's probably worth leading the show. It's so cool. So we will begin there to inject some good vibes into this baseball season. Tanny's open, kicks us off. Have a lovely holiday, boys. Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nico Horner.
All right, we love talking about issues around the game with you. Read this the other day about sticky stuff. This was in Bob Nightingale's piece in USA Today. A veteran executive told him this. The key is trying to figure out how pitchers are doing it. Quote, if umpires started checking infielders' gloves, I think they'd find the answer. Unquote. Well, that's intriguing.
I haven't seen that.
That's a mystery.
All right, Nico. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Thanks, man.
It's Nico Horner. Yeah.
Was that my...
That was you. Matt Schrift Dog. La Pantera.
I was just trying to say,
On the prowl.
That was,
you growled.
Leaned in a little too hard.
You growled a little bit. There's a little bit of a reverb.
Great defensive rotation by the Bears.
You just growl at me?
I mean, for anybody who didn't hear it, I liked the Panther sound effect.
Well, I know it's inspiring.
I thought Shrippin nailed it.
I'm not saying that you didn't.
Once we did the forensic analysis of, like, does he actually sound like a Panther? The answer was yes. All right, that does sound awful. I'd like to apologize. I knew what I meant. I knew what I was trying to do.
Akeem, what a defensive performance by this team tonight. You kept a high-flying offense out of the end zone.
That's it. That's all you can say to that.
Things that make you go.
One, two, three, and...
Spiegel Show, afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Please don't growl in a question to Craig Counsell coming up in 10 minutes.
There's no way to know if I'm going to do that.
I know. And I mean, honestly, who cares? Yeah, go ahead and growl.
You know, it's just...
You be you.
You know what I was trying to recreate, Danny, was the... You know when you text or you're typing and you write... with a lot of M's as if to indicate that you have a question, but you think you know the answer anyway, but you'd like to ask the question, and that's what came out right there.
That's an interesting way of interviewing.
Yeah.
you know how you text?
Uh-huh.
You know, we got a good action plan.
We do have a good action plan for Craig Counsell.
We do.
We're all about the action plan with that guy.
That's true.
Most important thing we could discuss.
That's true. Yeah. Well, there's an action plan to get you to a Mullion Haw live show if you'd like to be in attendance on July 18th from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. It's a really fun place to see a show. Live studio audience, special guests in attendance. We got a pair of tickets. All you got to do is have the contest number ready when you hear this drop.
You know, if Joakim Noah didn't average a double-double every night, then what in that world is he doing playing basketball? It's not impressive. 10 points and 10 boards? Woo, whipty frickin' do.
So, whenever you hear that, and you're like, I want more of it, 312-540-0670.
I want to see it in person, face-to-face.
That's what I'm saying.
Imagine that in a down vest. You know what I'm saying? That's how much better it could be.
You got to be there. We don't have a lot of time before we have to break for counsel.
Uh-huh.
But I want to bring this up early in the show so we can reference it throughout the show.
Sure.
Because we sometimes, you know, you and I see the world similarly on a lot of things. And I think one of the things is, yes, the goal is to win championships, but also this is an entertainment product of sorts. But you got to work a little bit harder for the entertainment when the product is as bad and as disappointing as the Cubs have been. But you went to the Cubs game last night with a very interesting person.
Yeah, I was invited by a friend who's also a friend of yours, and who had...
We could say his name.
Yeah,
if you
Doug.
Want.
Doug Meyer had met Carl Denson, who is jam band royalty and just an incredible musician, who also happens to be the saxophonist these days in the Rolling Stones. He's in the Rolling Stones. He's one of the two saxophonists with the Stones these days. And so he had met him and invited him to a ball game. And decided that as the social lubricant, he needed somebody who could speak both baseball and music. So that was me. I got invited. So I got to hang out last night with Carl Denson, who's a fascinating dude, a brilliant guy, and fun to introduce to people around the ballpark. As Carl, he's in the Rolling Stones. That was fun to say to a lot of people. He's been in the Stones for a decade. He's been playing with them. Whenever they have a horn section, it's him and Tim Reese on saxophone. So yeah, it was an amazing night full of like great conversations. I loved talking to him and showing him around the ballpark. It was so cool.
Did you say Rolling Stones more than he did?
Only when I was trying to take him upstairs and show him a good time. Show him the broadcast booth, and I had a chance to introduce him to the organist, to John Benedek, you know, figured that he would care. And then like Big Jim Obojkovic, who handles all the celebrity stuff for the Cubs. I happen to see him. I'm like, well, he ought to know who I'm here with. You know what I mean? So
yes.
Yes, I did.
I'm just saying it's fun. It's
oh
a fun
my God.
Thing to say.
It's outrageous. Yeah. It was crazy. And just like to see baseball people get very excited to talk to him. But he was so excited to be there. And like we go up there and at one point, somebody had said, oh, you know, has he met Quick Rick Fuse, who does the scoreboard, guy who is in charge of the scoreboard, big Stones fan. So I bring Carl up there. I'm introducing him to Quick Rick while he's doing the job. And then before you know it, Carl is punching buttons and changing the score on the scoreboard. He's like, so this guy is like having one of the times of his life. So me and Doug got to show this guy the time of his life when he's usually the one showing other people the time of their life, taking them backstage with Mick and Keith and more.
That's very cool.
It was awesome.
That's just very cool. You got to go to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones and our good friend Doug Meyer, who is once again going to be a generous supporter of the Radiothon, the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon for cancer research coming up August 15th.
I got awesome stories about Mick and Keith where we're going to sprinkle in later. And dig yourself.
I want to hear them.
Yeah,
man.
We'll get them in.
Whenever the conversation around the sports gets too negative, people need to just stay tuned, because at any moment we could just say, ah, screw it, give me a Stone story.
All right, I just got a couple. I got other stuff, other people he played with, stuff that maybe people wouldn't care about as much, but we'll sprinkle them in.
Talking Stones, we done.
Yeah, we're almost done. Thanks, Coach. But we got
just
more.
Just saying, man. It beats the Cubs game, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and Danny, I forgot to ask him the most important thing. I told you what I had to ask him, his most important, perhaps... He was in Sexual Chocolate in Coming to America.
Jackson Heights' own Mr. Randy Watson. Yes, Randy Watson.
That boy is good.
I'd like to give a big round of applause to my band, Sexual Chocolate.
That's him. That's him playing sax in Sexual Chocolate.
So fine, don't you agree?
How does that not come up?
Because his career's unbelievable. Dude played with James Brown. He played with Bob Dylan. He played with Phil Lesh and Bob Weir. He's on Lenny Kravitz's debut record. I didn't get there, man. Conversation was flowing.
I don't accept that.
Oh.
We'll just have to have him on.
That's exactly right.
I'll ask him all the Sexual Chocolate questions that we've been dying to know. That's very, very cool.
Go ahead, Randy Watson.
And it beats the hell out of the Cubs game. Craig Counsell, he's the manager of this thing. Maybe he'll explain what's coming on as we're now past the midway point of this season. Craig Counsell next on The Score.
Love of all inside of me, yeah.
Sexy chocolate!
Please welcome the manager, number 30, Craig Counsell.
I know it's official that I'm a Cub now, and I'm talking to Danny Parkins, you know what I mean?
Craig Counsell.
Nobody is interested in your takes, I promise. I promise.
God, that
I
checks promise. Out.
What are they tuning into right now? This guy over here, it's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. You're a guest, Craig.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Did you see the meme? You were memed very well last week with the hat head.
No, I try to stay away from that. I think that's healthy for me.
Don't you think he needs somebody in his life that tells him when he's been memed? You think?
We could be that for you, Craig.
Oh, God.
You guys are so much for me already. I don't want to put too much on your plate.
All right, fine, smartass. That's Craig Counsell, manager of the Chicago Cubs.
We mean a lot to him. I think that's what he said. You guys are already so much for me.
You guys are so much for me already.
We're not going to be the people in his life to tell him what he's been memed.
Only imagine how little we mean to him.
Craig Counsell with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Craig Counsell, kind enough to join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Thanks for the time, as always, Craig. How's it going, man?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing well. When do we get any reinforcements? There's a lot of injured guys. I know Merriweather threw yesterday. Any timeline on any of these guys coming back to help you out a little bit?
I think kind of the general timeline, nobody's into rehab games yet. So I think the general timeline for a group of guys is post All-Star break and the second half of July. I think Mark Leiter's probably trending towards the first one back just because he hasn't missed that much. I'd say Leiter and Assad are probably the early ones. And then, second half of July is kind of the Julian Merriweather, I'd say Merriweather and Jordan Wicks kind of second half of July.
What have you learned about some of the young guys who have been forced into some arduous situations in their stead over the past couple weeks?
Well, I think you're talking about Luke Little and Porter Hodge probably.
Yeah.
And I think they've done great with these opportunities, and it's been, for Luke, we've seen him most of the year, and You know, he's done a great job, I think, since coming back up of just sticking to like what he needs to do to be better. And it's really about, you have to be two pitches. You can't just be one pitch in the strike zone. And he's the slider. Since the slider's been in the strike zone, it's no coincidence that is, you know, he's been a better pitcher. And then Porter, really, it's, I mean, we're 15 innings into a big league career. So, you know, the learning that's coming at him is really fast, but he is learning fast. And we've seen good results from that.
Last night, the early innings kind of felt like the season. Like, balls hit hard in the first inning. My Nico is, 6 inches from a double down the line, and Castellanos makes that catch on Bellinger. And then they get a two-run opposite field double from a backup catcher. It's like, when you're going through a stretch like this, does the mood in the dugout go south when things have been bad already to that point?
No, because you got to go out there and compete still, and we all know that doesn't help you. Because when you're you got competition coming right ahead of you, you better have kind of your game face on, so to speak, at all times, because there's more coming at you. So, you keep competing, you keep doing your best. You can kind of tell a story about how the game didn't go your way. Nobody's going to feel bad for you about that. You just got to do a little better.
Do you scoreboard or standings watch at this point of the year?
I do not. I mean, the scoreboard, I think everybody scoreboard watches because it's, we're staring at it every day. So it's hard to say you don't scoreboard watch. Standings watch, no.
Even though you're staring at those flags every day.
Well, if you're staring at the flag, you're staring at the scoreboards, I think.
No? True. That's a good point. It is in the same general direction. I guess just like, so you were saying,
Do you lack peripheral vision?
No, I can take it all in, and it's all right there on my app. Smartphones, they're unbelievable. But like you were saying, All-Star break, late July, but then you have the reality of, okay, we're in last place, we're double-digit games out, like, it's almost like, is that going to be too little too late given the realities of where you are in the standings?
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't do me any good to think like that. You think about today's game and what do you control? And that's how you have to go about this. I can't worry about 12 games down the road. You worry about tonight. You worry about trying to get a result tonight. When you look up in 12 days, you're going to be, after a product of your results those previous 12 days. And that sounds, it's how you have to do it. And we'll keep doing it that way.
It's funny, Craig, like through the years, so many times watching baseball, covering baseball is like, well, they're struggling. It's about time to fire the hitting coach. It's so often just kind of a default first step that sort of happens or whatever. And I've fought against that because, hitting is so hard, and individual relationships with hitting coaches and anecdotal stuff, it can be a tricky thing. But looking at this team, I keep thinking, God, there seems to be some kind of group hitting thing that's wrong. Something's broken on a group level with the overall hitting approach. So can you help us understand if that is even a thing? Like the overall group's mindset at the plate, thinking of it as one cohesive thing, it looking the way it looks right now is troubling. Is that a concept we can even get behind, that you all share one sort of concept in that way?
Well, I mean, I think there's you go into games and you share a concept for sure. Is the concept wrong? I think there's individual nights you can say, yeah, I mean, the guy did a better job with that than we expected. But I think last night we were, I think we were on the right concept. We didn't get hits from it. And that's, you didn't get hits. We didn't square the ball up quite enough. But usually, look, it's on, I think hitting is on the, the individuals, and the individuals kind of collectively doing well and taking their turns doing well together creates a circle. And then you get some, your best players do some really impressive things as compared to the league. And that's what creates offense. And we've struggled in a couple areas this year, and that's what's led to, you know, frankly, not a good enough offense.
Where do you think you've struggled the most when you think about it?
Well, the number one is we've struggled from offense at the catcher position. There's no question about that. And then, you know, I think I don't think we have any players kind of having, you know, the all-star type seasons offensively. So nobody's kind of exceeding expectations. So that caps it. And then the unlucky part is the runners in scoring position stuff is that's the point where you can kind of point to just, we just haven't caught breaks there. And that's, you know, I think statistically plays out too. And that hurts you as well.
You know, when we had Carter Hawkins on at Cubs convention, like to ask him the question, or anyone in his role, like, who are you guys expecting big things from that maybe fans and media aren't talking about? And he singled out one name to us this year, and he said Miguel Amaya. And then you just talked about the catching position and offensive production. What hasn't gone according to how you guys clearly projected it internally? Like, why hasn't it been working?
Yeah, I mean, the why is he you know, he's a young player that I think in 170 plate appearances last year showed a really positive first step. And there's just been regression to that this year. And he's struggled this year. And that's, he's a young player. And hopefully these at bats are a teacher for him at some point. But we haven't got production from that spot. And it hurts your offense.
We're talking to Craig Counsell here, Parkinson Spiegel on the Score. You know, we get to talk to you every couple of weeks, and so now this is past the halfway point of the season. So I was thinking about things that we asked you before the season started, and we could just check back in. I remember we joked about, like, the only thing you got asked about more than yourself was Christopher Morel. How has he been defensively at third base now that we're a half a season in, relative to what you expected him to be defensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is progress that is, we have moved forward there. He has gotten better. I think I'm very confident in saying that. You know, I think now the question is, like, how much better can we get the second half of the season? And then when we evaluate that, is like, is that going to be good enough moving forward to commit to the player? And I think that's kind of where we're at with it. And I think that's pretty fair. But he has gotten better for sure. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that part. You know, probably the offense has been disappointing, but he has gotten better defensively.
Do you think that's at all carried over because of the defense? Like, is it impacting him at the plate?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
What have you learned about this bunch, about some of these guys? And now that you've had a half a season and had all the spring to get to know them, what are some things you feel like you know now that you didn't know then?
About who?
I can get specific if you like. I was going to let you go to whoever you wanted to in the lineup. But, you know, how about Ian? How about Ian Happ and Nico Horner? What have you learned about those guys?
Well, I mean, I think Ian is very, what I love about Ian is very, like, dedicated and serious about his craft. And the detail that he kind of prepares with is really cool. For Nico, it's just like, it's kind of Energizer Bunny, man. Like, it's just going and going and going. And his kind of relentlessness and grit, like, they, you know, that's kind of a word that gets thrown around a lot, but like, he is like the definition of grit. Like, it never stops. And that's a really great trait, and it rubs off on other people.
Oh, we'll tell those guys. We get a chance to talk to those guys. We'll tell them. I'll give you Dansby Swanson and Seiya Suzuki. What have you learned about managing those guys?
You know, I Dansby is really interesting because he's been on some other teams, kind of unlike those other guys, those first couple of guys you mentioned. And so just some perspective from having success in some other places, has been interesting for sure. You know, Dansby's season, I think, like, you know, he hasn't had the offensive season that he's wanted to, for sure. You know, and then, and I think the knee kind of messing him up early in the season that derailed them a little bit. Hopefully we can get them back on track for the second half. I think that's really important to get him. I think he's doing in a good spot health-wise now, but it certainly derailed him for a little bit. You know, I think Say is having a pretty good season. I think, you know, if you look at his numbers right now and you look at where offense in the league is, he's having a pretty good offensive season. Offense is different this year. It's a little bit down. If you look at Say's numbers, he is doing a pretty darn good job. It's quiet. It doesn't feel like super loud, but he's doing a pretty good job.
I'll ask you about one more guy in like the micro. We get asked about him more than maybe anyone else by fans, and that's PCA, right? Like the speed is easy to see. The glove is easy to see. So hyped as a prospect and who he came here for in a trade. He has that at bat in the Saturday game against Milwaukee where he rallies 0-2 count, drives the ball to right field, puts you guys ahead. Seems like a mature at bat. He's had stand-up triples. That's easy to profile. But like, what do you think he profiles as an offensive player at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, Pete is a player that there's been players, very many similar players like this, and it's just it's easy to see his physical gifts. For even for fans, right? It's just they just jump out at you. And those players have come with the biggest expectations. And they often come with the largest learning curve too. That's just kind of the way it is. And so Pete's like still needs at bats. There's no question. Like experience just facing major league pitching. Like sometimes it's the failures too, but we just got to keep Pete going in the right direction. He's an unfinished offensive player. There's no question about unfinished hitter. And we've just got to keep making progress with him as a hitter. It's not always linear. And sometimes it's frankly, some of the at-bats are tough to watch. Right. But we just got to keep making progress with him because it's where there is a great player in there. You don't know when it's going to come out exactly, but there is a great player in there.
We're talking to Craig Counsell. I know, you know, your job is as manager, like you said, win a game today, but you have front office experience. It's July. You understand the conversation around the trade deadline. Theo Epstein once told Spiegs and I on the show, like, even if you're in a competitive window, you can never waste an opportunity to sell by like lying to yourself about what you are in that particular year, because those opportunities when you're supposed to be competitive are so infrequent. Do you share that philosophy in general if it came to that?
I'm not sure I understand what he said. Can you?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was in 17?
It was in 17.
And
he was admitting that they were going to have to consider selling if they didn't get it together by around the time the deadline came.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always just look at it like you just got to make good decisions. Like whatever a good decision is, make the good decision. So it's simple as that. Like for me, I don't know.
You know, it's an interesting spot, Craig, because like manager value and what it is. You know, I remember during the press conference, you talked very specifically about it's a lot of good decisions kind of lining up and that accumulates the value. Is a half season enough to see what a manager's value is? Because it's been a tough go, as you know.
I don't know. I mean, I know my philosophy hasn't changed there, so I'm going to keep doing that. And I still think that's my job. So that's not going to change.
We were wondering who the best offensive player you had was as a teammate and how it impacted you guys in the lineup when you were like, oh, damn, that guy was carrying us and like the presence of the superstar as a player.
The best offensive season probably that I ever saw was probably Luis Gonzalez in 2001.
I'm looking at it right now. Figure that's where you're going to go. That's pretty good. 57 homers, 142 RBIs, for Luis Gonzalez, OPS over 1.1. So yeah, that's the question. What was the impact for you guys knowing that you had a dude who was just like dominating like that? How did that have an effect on the rest of the lineup? If it did?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was a great offensive team, actually. but it was a, it was obviously a good, very good team. I mean, it helped me. I hit a, in front of them. I mean, I knew I was going to, they weren't going to try to walk me because why would you? But it didn't make me any better, really. You
know? No.
But I, no, I mean, I look, the thing it helped is that you have one player just creating a, so much, so many runs. I mean, that's what those seasons do. He was by himself just creating a massive number of runs. And so he's basically taking the burden off, you know, players like myself or whoever, other players in the lineup.
So psychologically, does it help Bryson Stott or Alec Bohm to know that they've got superstars around them in the lineup to improve? Is that a real thing in MLB?
Look, I think obviously have players having great years, you know, it, there is some psychological benefit to it. Like, I can't tell you exactly how much. But of course, like watching a guy have a great year around you, you know, he's doing great things for your team that, that clearly is going to make you feel good.
Hey, you carried him in the 2001 NLCS, okay?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe for five games. Yep.
See, I'm just saying, give yourself a little credit. All right, Craig. Well, thank you for the time, man. As always, go get him tonight, and we'll see you at the ballpark soon.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank
Craig.
You. As manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell with us. Yeah, that's five games still, but it's a big five games. NLCS MVP.
He admitted to it a little bit there, the psychological effect of having, of knowing there's a stud in your lineup or a couple of them, and being able to take some of that pressure off. It's impossible for me to watch the Phillies, arguably the best team in baseball, at their high water mark right now in terms of games above 500, even without Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, just unleashing stud after stud after young player. Like, and that's Mercado getting his first win. You know, you'll see Wheeler and Nola and Suarez, and you saw, like, there's just so much badassery on that team. And I have to believe that young players feel a freedom to perform at a higher level and improve, knowing full well that there's a couple $300 million dudes right there in the lineup. I have to believe that.
Well, it actually, so I haven't heard, I've heard basically every post-game Craig Counsell press conference this season. I have not heard every pre-game one. I've heard a decent amount of them. He keeps saying a version of, you know, like, you know, the offense has to be better, the offense has to be better, the offense has to be better. But that answer that he gave early on in our conversation about, like, why hasn't it been, he listed three things. He said, haven't gotten enough from the catcher position. We've had no all-star caliber seasons offensively, and that caps how good you could be. And then he said, and then obviously the runners in scoring position thing, which has been talked about a lot. But I think that second, like the first point about Amaya was interesting. We followed up on it. Mm-hmm. The third point, runners in scoring position, we've beaten it into the ground. But that second point, I've talked about it a lot with you. That ties into your Luis Gonzalez thing.
Yeah, there's nobody performing at such a level where you're like, oh man, that dude's going to carry us for a little while. It freaking matters, man.
And they have guys that are absolutely being paid like they're supposed to. Dansby is supposed to be able to do it, even if it's just for a stretch. I know a lot of his value is defense, but he's supposed to have stretches where he does it. Saya is supposed to have stretches where he does it. Bellinger is supposed to have stretches where he does it. And Morel is supposed to have stretches where he does it. Mm. And just in that interview, he was like, I actually think Saya's having a pretty good year. Okay. You can squint and see where he's coming from.
No, you can't. With an 800 OPS, and he continues to hit the ball hard, the exit velocity stuff is there. But no, and you,
and with a big injury in the middle of it.
Yep. And you've made this point about nobody having a career year. I think I saw this today. I'll have to find it. I think the only dudes who are exceeding their projected F-WAR, their projected wins above replacement on the Cubs, are Shota Imanaga. He might be the only one. You know,
Assad.
I saw it with Shota. There might be only one other.
Okay.
And I'll have to check and see who it is. But it's, I mean, maybe it's Bush. But it's like, there's, of all the teams and people exceeding their projected F-WAR, the Cubs are very, very low on that list. No one is doing it, but he expected that and told us early in the year it's got to be young players.
I think there was a lot of fascinating stuff in there actually today with like some of the specifics on guys on PCA, biggest learning curve but highest ceiling for him. I don't know that we've talked about him in that way specifically with like why his talents would lend itself to having a bigger learning curve than most. I think that, I thought that was interesting. I think there was a lot there. And then just keep making good decisions. We saw it with the Hendricks stuff. He is dispassionate. He is a cutthroat, rational thinker.
Thinks a lot more like a front office dude than a manager sometimes.
He will not have a problem if this team needs to sell. I mean, he'll obviously be pissed. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to project that onto him. He will be pissed because it will represent failure and underachieving. But if that is the correct decision, he will be pushing for that decision to be made. That was, I think there was a lot there that people could chew on actually and react to from Craig Counsell if you want to. And of course, if it ever got too negative for you, Speaks was at the game last night with a Rolling Stone. We'll get to that at some point. We've got categories today. We have our last Peter's Ponderings to get to today. And oh boy, do we have some sound and audio that'll get you hyped for maybe the only good team in Chicago. It's Parkins and Spiegel on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.